This is Michelle Anderson, north of Bangor, and today, once again, I am south of Bangor in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. I'm at the Freedom Action Conference. Thank you. And today I'm here, or right now I'm here, with Michael Badnarik. Did I say that?
Badnarik.
That's B-A-D-N-A-R-I-K. You might recognize his name. He ran in 2004 against President Bush and whoever the guy of the moment was. Was it
John Kerry?
I get him mixed up with Al Gore. Is it the same guy? So, Michael, it's a pleasure to meet you. And can you tell me why you're here at the conference?
I was invited by Tom DeWeese to give the keynote speech to basically set the tone for the conference. The people who have attended this conference have been coming for a number of years, and the purpose of the conference is to give patriots and liberty-minded activists the tools that they need to be more effective in communicating these ideas with their friends and family and the people that they meet in their personal circles, to, you know, help spread these important ideas. And Tom DeWeese and I participated in Continental Congress 2009, last November, from November 11th to the 22nd. And we participated in a group of people that got together to formally complain about the government. Most of what our government does is unconstitutional. And basically, the purpose of the Continental Congress is to document that and prove it beyond any shadow of a doubt, and to insist that the federal government take certain actions to correct these problems. We gave instructions to the state governments to, you know, fix this and protect us from the federal government. And we also gave a list of recommendations to your average American. They were action, a call to action. These are the things that each individual person can do to help fix the problem and move the United States back in a direction of liberty. Well, I was very honored to be elected president of the Continental Congress, and I gave an opening speech that Tom thought was so wonderful and so informative that he asked me to give that same speech here as our opening comments. And I probably didn't tell anybody anything they didn't already know, but it's just kind of it's like a pep rally to get people excited, to get people to acknowledge and understand one more time why we're here. You know, we're not here to party. We're not sitting around, you know, to drink pina coladas around the pool. You know, we're here to fix what's broken. Most of what the government does is unconstitutional. And if we don't fix it, it will just continue to get worse. And so we do have a very important responsibility. And all of the people here are, you know, passionate and dedicated, and they are determined. Determined to follow in the footsteps of the Founding Fathers, which is one of the reasons that Valley Forge was chosen as a location. You know, this is where George Washington and his troops were, I mean, freezing to death. They didn't have enough food. I mean, the hardship that they went through to protect this idea of life, liberty, and private property. I mean, they dedicated everything they had. And during my presidential campaign, I was averaging about 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night. I was doing 12 to 16 interviews a day, very rarely able to eat. If I did, it was usually on the fly, jumping in and out of the car, on an airplane, you know, every other day. And you know, I was literally in a different hotel every night. Every once in a while, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd have to stop and look around to try to figure out where I was. And, you know, when you do that for 5 months in a row, I mean, traveling is nice, but after a while, I mean, this is hard. I mean, it's tiring. And there were moments along the campaign trail where, you know, I just felt like complaining. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I, you know, don't want to do another interview. And then I would think of George Washington and his troops at Valley Forge, and I would realize how hard they suffered for this same goal. And I figure, I'm riding in airplanes. You know, I'm not freezing to death. I, you know, I may not eat well, but at least I'm eating. And, you know, if the Patriots at Valley Forge could suffer through all of that hardship, it made it difficult, if not impossible, for me to complain about my own circumstances. I was merely following in their footsteps and doing what was necessary to spread the message of Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, and the other founders of our country.
Well, when you say most of what the government, the federal government's doing is illegal, could you give my listeners a couple of examples and why such actions are illegal?
First of all, your listeners need to understand that we, the people, ordain and establish the Constitution. We invented Congress. So who works for who? Well, clearly they're supposed to work for us. And everybody who answers the question says, well, they're supposed to work for us. They clearly don't, but we all know that they should. And we have individual rights granted to us by our Creator, and we give government privileges. You know, a right is something that you can do without asking. You don't need permission. A privilege is something that someone of a higher authority allows you to do. We, the people, have rights. We give the government privileges. And in the Constitution, the privileges granted to the federal government are explicitly listed. They're in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Those are the only things the federal government is allowed to do. So, by definition, if the federal government is doing something that's not on that list, it, by definition, is unconstitutional.
Is healthcare in that list?
No, healthcare is not on that list. Education is not on that list.
Bailing out companies
is not on that list. One of the privileges that Congress has, it's identified in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5, is the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. It does not say that Congress has the power to coin and print money. They only have the power, they're only given the power to coin money. Well, why is that? Well, before the Constitution, we had the Articles of Confederation. Under the Articles of Confederation, each of the 13 colonies was an independent country. The same way that you and I think of France, Italy, Spain. The Founding Fathers considered New York, Pennsylvania, Virginia. You know, Thomas Jefferson was a citizen of Virginia. Benjamin Franklin was a citizen of Pennsylvania. You were a citizen of your state. The states were, you know, free, sovereign, and independent. They were private countries, individual countries. And so each country, each colony, had its own money. He had Pennsylvania money, New York money, Connecticut money, Delaware money. I mean, you had 13 different kinds of money. And we had borrowed money from France and Spain so that we could fight in the American Revolution. And after the American Revolution was over, I know this is going to sound really funny, but France and Spain wanted us to pay back the loan.
No.
It was a loan. It wasn't a gift. And so the 13 colonies were supposed to pay money to help, you know, give France and Spain their money back. And each of the 13 colonies were going, well, you know, we're busy, we're growing tobacco, we're enjoying liberty. We owe you the money, but we'll catch you next month. You know, we're good for it. We'll catch you later. Well, when government needs money, frequently they print it. They had the printing presses running nonstop. Each state was trying to print money faster than the next state. And when you continue to print money out of thin air, you cause hyperinflation. You know, if you have a dollar that's going to be worth 50 cents next week. Nobody's going to take your dollar. I mean, you may as well use monopoly money. I mean, it's worthless. And if people won't take your money, then the economy stops. How are you going to buy and sell anything? Because everybody knows the money is worthless. And so the delegates were sent to Philadelphia in 1787 not to write the Constitution. They were supposed to modify the Articles of Confederation. And, well, basically the Founding Fathers did more than they were allowed to do. So they came up with the Constitution. The big problem, the reason that they were in Philadelphia in the first place, is because, well, we're printing too much money. So now you're going to form this new Constitution, this new form of government, and are you going to give the government the power to print money? Well, no. That's what caused the problem in the first place. I mean, we're not stupid. You know, we're here to fix that problem. And so Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5 explicitly gives Congress the power to coin money, and in glaring omission is not the privilege to print money. If I don't have an apple, can I give it to you? I can hold my hand out, and what's there? Well, there's not an apple in my hand, and so you and I are both going to go hungry. I can't give you something that I don't have. If Congress does not have the authority to print money, can I give that to somebody else?
No,
they don't have it. How can you give away something that you don't have? And by definition, we give Congress that privilege. We never told Congress that, you know, you can subcontract this and give those privileges away. So even if Congress did have the authority to print money, they still could not give it away to someone else. But 1913, Congress pretended, and I say pretended because it's not valid, pretended to create the Federal Reserve Act, which presumably, if you read the paper, gives the Federal Reserve, a private corporation, the authority to print money out of thin air. You can't do that. You didn't have it to give away in the first place. Now, ironically, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 6, the next sentence says that Congress is responsible to prevent counterfeiting. Well, what is counterfeiting? Well, counterfeiting is making artificial money, printing money out of thin air. So not only did Congress not have the authority to give the Federal Reserve this power, they have a responsibility to make sure that if the Federal Reserve somehow comes into existence some other way, Congress has a responsibility to shut it down. I mean, this is so blatantly obvious if you read the Constitution. Now, I teach an 8-hour class on the Constitution, and I'm one of the first people to admit the Constitution is not perfect. I mean, we can go through and we can find, you know, mistakes and errors in the Constitution. But let's pretend for a moment that the Constitution is perfect. Just pretend. If you don't read the Constitution, you know, if you don't understand the ideas in the Constitution, and more importantly, if you're not willing to stand up and defend the Constitution, what good is it? George Bush was right. It's only a piece of paper. You may as well bury the Constitution underneath a pyramid. You know, maybe they'll discover it 2,000 years from now. Maybe 2,000 years from now, people will be smarter, you know, and they will realize how important these ideas are. Now, when I teach my Constitution class, my students are usually surprised when I say, you know, you want to burn the Constitution? You want to shred the Bill of Rights? I don't care. I mean, go ahead. And they're like, Michael, how can you say that? I mean, this is the Constitution. Well, it's not the Constitution that's important. It's the ideas in the Constitution. When our elected representatives take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, they don't put their name on a schedule and go down to the National Archive. You know, they don't stand in front of the piece of paper, protecting the Constitution. The Constitution is protected. Nobody's going to damage the Constitution. But it's not the Constitution that they have promised to defend. They've promised to defend the ideas in the Constitution. And basically, I've been able to whittle the Constitution down to 7 words.
Okay, what are they?
Don't hurt me. Don't take my stuff.
Okay.
That's all you need to know. You know, don't hurt me. Don't take my stuff. As long as everybody understood that, everybody followed just those 2 rules, then we would have freedom and liberty. I mean, you'd have no murder. You'd have no rape because you're not going to hurt somebody. There would be no theft, you know, because you're not taking other people's stuff. There would be no reason to have, you know, SWAT teams, you know. I mean, life would be, well, from our point of view right now, life would be pretty much perfect. I mean, most of us can't even imagine how wonderful it could be. But most of what our government does is unconstitutional. Why? Because we don't know the Constitution. The government does whatever it wants because we're not there to stop them. And we don't stop them because, well, it's the government. They must know what they're doing. The government would never do anything wrong, I assume. It's like, really? I mean, have you read the Constitution?